Hey, Nathan here. Did you know that one of the many perks of being an Off The Ball member is the opportunity to join us at member events? The next of these is on Monday, October 7th at Killeen Castle. Find out how you can join us. Just listen to the latest episode of Golf Weekly or become a member now at offtheball.com/join.
Rugby on Off The Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster Rugby. Never stop competing.
All right, you're very welcome along to a very special free rugby podcast. We thought we'd put this together and put it out to the masses so that you can get a bit of a sample of what to expect from us over the course of this rugby year. So earlier this week, I sat down with Brian O'Driscoll and we were chatting about his early stages of being a Leinster player, what September's used to be like for him when he started off. Of course, Brian O'Driscoll's first season in a Leinster jersey, and indeed an Ireland jersey, was the autumn of 1999. He had just made his first Ireland appearance that summer and then went into the Leinster setup. And obviously, at the end of 1999, there was a Rugby World Cup coming down the tracks. So Ireland were playing warm-up matches and they were trying to get themselves ready for the World Cup. And a lot of you will probably remember this. Some of our younger listeners may not quite remember this, but one of the most famous warm-up matches that Ireland had in the build-up to that World Cup was actually against Munster. Now, Munster weren't overly happy with their representation in Warren Gatland's Ireland squad, so they kind of felt they had a point to prove when they played one another in this warm-up match. Now, Brian O'Driscoll, unluckily or luckily, wasn't actually involved on the day. He wasn't involved in the squad, but he does have memories of the events of that match and what actually happened in the build-up to that World Cup. So we're going to hear from Ronan O'Gara and Alan Quinlan very shortly. But first, let's kick things off by hearing what Brian O'Driscoll had to say. It is 25 years this month since that Munster game that you mentioned, Ireland against Munster, in a warm-up for the World Cup. Bizarre enough circumstances, Munster get the win that day. You're not involved in this in any capacity whatsoever, as far as I realise.
Yeah, no, I was in the stand for it. I was in the stand. Yeah, I was down in
Musgrave, I think.
Musgrave it was, yeah. And I remember, yeah, Tom Tierney, God rest him, was playing nine, and he obviously was playing against Strings, who was just emerging, coming through for Munster at the time. And Tom, I'm nearly sure Brian O'Mara might have gone on that World Cup as well.
Yeah, he certainly played for Ireland that day.
Yeah. And yeah, so it was those two guys with Munster, you know, and Strings coming through, and then all of a sudden Strings, you look back now, Strings is the one that nearly got 100 caps of the three, and the other two were certainly more highly tipped. It just shows about taking your opportunity when it presents itself and then not looking back. I remember thinking, God, we could be in trouble here for losing to a provincial team. We're going to a World Cup against Argentina and Australia, who then subsequently went on to win it. But it's a little wake-up call, all right. We weren't a very strong squad back in 99. We really weren't. We'd been in the doldrums in the 90, in reality, you know, as an international rugby team. I think I might have heard a stat that we won like 6 or 7 Five Nations games over the course of the whole decade. Something crazy like that. So we shouldn't have had high expectations just because we were playing a few games at home. Shouldn't have had high expectations. And then, you know, when Munster beat us, we definitely shouldn't have had any expectations.
The photos are hilarious. Obviously, Quinny O'Gara are playing and a host like that great Munster team are all there.
Rog playing NFL, like the world's biggest shoulder pads.
Yeah.
He'd be quite fashionable these days. I've seen my missus wearing shoulder pads equivalent to the ones that he was wearing back in those days.
The only thing that was missing from the photos was a trophy, looking at the jubilation from the Munster players day. I think they were pretty chuffed to be in Ireland on that occasion.
Listen, you beat the national team, you know. I suppose it's, you first of all, what you do individually is you get the attention of the national coach going, well, I put in a good performance, maybe keep an eye on me. I'm not involved in your World Cup squad, maybe I should be. And certainly from Roger's point of view, it was, you know, Gats decided to go with Angus McKean, a fifth prop rather than a third out half. And as a result, I ended up playing my only ever game coming off the bench in that World Cup at 10 against Romania. So thanks, Gats, for that. So, yeah, it was, It's just such different times. You know, yeah. You can look back and smile, but we were clueless to what the expectation of professionalism was around how you behaved, around fitness levels, around attention to detail. Like, you look at the level of journaling that goes on by, you know, the professionals these days, that attention to detail is wild. You talk to them, they're leaving no stone unturned, trying to pick the brains of anyone that they feel as though they can, you know, get some intel from. Whereas we were kind of just winging it back in those days, where, you know, it was great, you know, we were getting paid to play professional rugby, even though I'd no amateur experience. You feed off the players that had been there, and you're a product of the environment, and certainly the environment definitely wasn't professional. It was a good social aspect to it from very early on. And when you're seeing key leaders, you know, behaving a particular way, it's very hard to break that mold. And it took us a number of years to kind of get over the realization that, you know, we weren't doing enough.
25 years is the month that Ireland played Munster. The Rugby World Cup squad had been named. There wasn't as many Munster players in it as you might have felt. And there was a bit of an old chip on the shoulder.
There was. And yeah, it's amazing. It's 25 years. I'm sure many Munster fans remember that game down in Cork, in Virgin Media Park, as it is now. It was weird because, there was a little bit of bitterness that we had five in the Irish World Cup squad. They named the squad early. I think it wasn't due to be named for another week or so.
Yeah.
And it was a funny build-up. I think they might have played Argentina the previous Saturday. And then they were playing the provinces. They were to play Munster, Connacht, Ulster, in that order, I think. And they named the squad early after the Argentina game, if I'm correct. And there was Peter Clossy, David Corkery, Brian O'Mara, Tom Tierney, and Mike Mullins were the five that were included.
Yeah. Not all of them made the match day squad for Ireland.
Yeah, but the funny part about this is, I think, yes, there was a little bit of a chip, maybe, and a bit disappointment, particularly for Wally, myself and Axel in the back row. We felt that, you know, all three of us were in contention, and maybe one of us or two of us might have got in the mix. John Hayes was coming good as a tight end. Mm. Angus McKean got picked ahead of him. Again, these are all personal disappointments for fellas. Frankie was disappointed he didn't get in the squad as hooker. Marcus probably as well. So nearly every one of us, Mick Galway, at the time, he was kind of cast aside around that time and came back, got back in the Irish squad. John Langford was the only non-Irish qualified player in our team. And that was the emergence of Jason Holland. He had trained once or twice at Munster. I didn't even know him. Most of the players didn't know him. He came over playing with Middleton. We were down so bad in numbers as regards squad depths, with a number of injuries of guys who were in the squad, that Jason got called in and was... He was an out half. He was playing 12 beside Rog that night. Colin McMahon, who was predominantly a wing forward, young at the time, he was playing on the wing. So we were literally down to the bare bones.
And Kidney was using this during the week to go.
Not as much. Not too bad, because I remember I travelled down to Cork, which I would do a lot with John Hayes. He lived close to me at home, and we would, one week he would drive, the next week I would drive, or vice versa. And we went down. We were very relaxed. We met Golov actually in Mitchelstown, and he jumped in the car with us, and we went to Cork. We went to the Maryborough Hotel. I remember it well. Very relaxed. This was a friendly.
What age were you at that stage?
I was 24.
Had you been in Ireland squads before that?
I had. I was called into an Irish squad in 98.
Not
I was
capped.
I was 24, 25. I would have been in the Irish squad, and in 98, World Cup squad, or the build-up, the World Cup warm-ups. I didn't play in those two. I trained a bit with Ireland. So I was kind of, been mentioned that I was a possibility for this. Had we won the Interpros at that stage? I think we had, because a lot of that rugby back then was nearly July, August in the Interpros. I think we'd won the Interpros. So we were, It was very relaxed. Met up at the hotel, and it all kind of changed pretty quickly when we had a team meeting, and then.
So who was leading that?
Well, you know, Declan would have at that point, and Niall O'Donovan, Gerry Holland, they were there. And at that point, the little bit of bitterness kind of engulfed us in a sense that, you know, these guys are coming to Cork. You know, this is your chance. They're, it was a bit of old school. You know, they're going to do X, Y, and Z, and you should be in some of you should be in the Irish squad, and we should have more players there. And it kind of started to kind of dawn on me then that, better get the head right for this. And
so you weren't actually thinking like that before?
No, not as much so. Right, I didn't need much convincing now to get the bit of nastiness going in the head.
Yeah.
So that started in the hotel. When we got up to the dressing room, I think there was another chat with Golov, and pre-match, there was tears coming down his face. Like, it was like, this means what this means to us. And, you know, Golov was a great motivator like that. And he wasn't putting any of it on because he was bitter. He was upset. He was frustrated.
When you're saying he was crying, is that was he sitting quietly or was that...
No, not sobbing, but when he was talking, you could see the emotion. Golov was emotional like that. He was unbelievable to give a team talk.
Was he?
Talk about what it means and what it should mean and what, you know, when you put on the jersey, all that kind of stuff. And it was all factual stuff. So it changed quickly, and then we were nicely primed and we hit the field and we... We were like caged animals, really, and it was phenomenal, really. You know, I suppose the what it meant and what it should mean. The crowd were incredible. It was 4,000 or 5,000 there at that time, and it was strange that everyone in the ground was cheering for Munster, and there was a real kind of edge to it. But it was so funny because Peter Clawhussy was. He was in the Irish squad and he was due to play. Mm. And mysteriously, he had this back strain kind of in the latter part
of the week.
Just flared up.
What are you suggesting?
He knew what was coming. Claw knew what was coming because I think himself and Golov, he got that kind of vibe off Golov. Yeah.
Get out of it.
He didn't. He said, you'll fucking get it Friday night. I said it again. Sorry, my apologies. And you'll get it on Friday night. And... So Claw mysteriously kind of had a back strain and they did get it and it was very physical. And I remember we were able to sustain it for probably 40, 50 minutes and then we started to wane a little bit. But then Keith Wood came on, Andy Ward came on, Dion O'Quinnigan came on, Ross Nesdale, but there was the big guns came on then. They had a couple in reserve, you know, and they were trying people out. Obviously they were going to mix and match, so that gave us a lift, you know. Like Dion O'Quinnigan was the captain, lovely fella. Andy Ward was picked in the squad, so Wally and myself and Axel were...
Just say lovely fella about Dion O'Quinnigan.
Yeah, very nice fella. No, genuinely, okay. he was a lovely fella. And He was a gentleman, but he was in the squad ahead of me. Wally Axel, mm-hmm. Andy Ward, the same. David Corkery was playing on the Irish team. You know, Corks was a teammate of ours, but he was in there. Eric Miller, Kieran Dawson. So it was incredible. It was very strange, and we all played out of our skin that night and beat Ireland, and it was. It was really what turned into kind of this relaxing day, which I didn't really think much about
was
on
like
the way to
late.
Cork. It turned up that there was a significance to this.
I wondered about the because like in the co-light of day now, like Munster beating Ireland feels like this really sort of outrageous thing. But at that time, I remember going to see Ireland against New South Wales in Sydney in 1999, and Ireland were not good. They were beaten at the Gap that day. Like that's the context for this Irish team. So was it a great shock? Like, listen, we know what happened at the World Cup after, but was this a shock?
We didn't help him. Obviously, the Warren Gatland's and I think Donal, Donal Lennon was the manager, they planned this and they wanted to get game time and they wanted to mix and match the squad and get players up to speed. And they thought, play the provinces, no travel, you're going to get tough games, you're going to get... physical games, which they thought would be beneficial. And look, by and large, you know, them losing to us, probably more of a psychological thing, and it harmed them a little bit, I would say. it was funny because I was on standby for the squad. I think Wally was as well. And a few of us ended up going out to the hotel in Inchidani that night.
Okay.
Meeting up with him and kind of video reviews on Saturday and stuff like that. So we were kind of sitting in the room with all of them. And it was a bit of sorry about that and keep the head down because... and then Wally and myself ended up playing the following week for Connacht against Ireland.
When
played Connacht the week after, yeah. Yeah, so I did play once for Connacht.
No way. How did that come up?
Scored two tries in that match and we nearly beat them.
Was that Gatland going, I want to get another look at you? Or?
No, we were on standby. So I think throughout that period, there wasn't many games coming up and there wasn't, a Celtic League or anything like that. So,
but why were you in the, why didn't Connacht use their own players?
They had injuries.
Okay. And
is that an official Connacht appearance then for you?
I don't know. I presume maybe it is. So I think they had a couple of injuries and they had other guys obviously weren't in the Irish squad at the time and you know it was requested that we would play, so Wally and myself played against Ireland the week after and for about 60 minutes we were flying it. We were at one point 15 points up on Ireland, playing with no kind of pressure and just throwing the ball around
in Galway
in the sports ground and then they did bring on, made a number of changes and it made a difference and I think we lost by 10 or 15 points ourselves, but and eventually then I got called into the squad, David Corkery, and I made my debut against Romania, so thankfully I didn't kind of box the head off Woody or anyone or do anything that I would have had to kind of keep the head down when I got into the Irish squad. But yeah, it was an interesting couple of weeks, but it was so funny and I just love the fact that Claude dodged that match. He just knew it.
I was just doing a quick gig, see if they find any photographs of you in a Connacht shirt, but they must exist.
Maybe do, yeah, somewhere. Yeah. Barry Gavin was number 8. His young lads on the 20s. Hugh Gavin, great player, and I've met Barry a couple of times in the last couple of seasons with the 20s and he was number 8 and Wally and myself were wing forwards and yeah, it was a great experience. And obviously my World Cup didn't last too long. Then I got my debut against Romania on the Friday night. And we played Argentina and Lons on the Monday night, or the Tuesday night, and that was it. So my World Cup was from Thursday to probably Wednesday morning. I was back home. Yeah, short one, yeah.
When you talk, Quinny, about a viciousness or physicality in that game between Munster and Ireland, like, do you mean not just in the tackles, but were there words exchanged, even players who were
no,
up against
not
opposing
words,
players?
But it was like, look, sometimes, I've always said this, sometimes the hardest contact you will ever experience is in your own training sessions, because there's no referee, it's nearly in a small little channel, and you're kind of battering into each other, there's nowhere to hide, and It can be physical and very direct and you know we had a training session in 2001 where Niall O'Donovan was the manager, the forwards coach. You had the team was picked for the weekend and the extended squad and subs. There was 8 or 10 forwards there. They're training with us, so they went up against us doing lineouts, and within the space of 5 minutes, there was 16 on 16. Brawl.
Jesus.
And I remember afterwards someone said they saw Nilo rubbing his hands together saying, oh, this is great preparation for Saturday. And that's kind of the way it was. It wasn't any kind of snaky punching or sly ones. It was nearly confrontational and then there would be a bit heated. But again, Claw was involved in that. I remember not being heavily involved in that at all. A bit of pushing and shoving. Genuinely, no, I wasn't, thankfully. And there was no wild swinging or anything like that, but there was one bit of a scuffle that continued, and amazingly, it was Peter Clossy against Des Clossy, two brothers fighting each other, and they were going full on the floor. So people got a giggle out of that as well. And so there wasn't any
sort of... Who won that one?
I can't remember. I think it was broken up. But there wasn't any sort of dirty blows or kind of stamping or sly stuff. It was just... There was a bit of extra oomph in the tackle and the clean out and... but look, that was part of it, and I think it was a unique situation that probably wouldn't happen nowadays if they played one of the provinces. There was another one happened after in the foot and mouth where we were going to play the quarter final, I think in Lille or the semi final, and it was around the foot and mouth, and there was an Ireland select team came to Thomond Park to play play Munster, but I don't think it's happened since, is it?
Mm. Oh. Was it Roger said 5 Munster players were picked in that squad, Ireland squad?
It was 5, yeah, yeah. How many Peter Clossy, Tom Tierney, Brian O'Mara, Mike Mullins and David Corkery.
How many did you feel then or now?
I didn't really, again, it was kind of early days for me. I wasn't there with a piece of paper saying I should be in, but I definitely think that, you know, not so much myself. Wally and Axel were definitely candidates. I thought John Hayes, Frankie, were definitely
double figures at least possible.
Yeah, there should have been. There could have easily. And look, there was very small. It wasn't the case that they were blatantly left out. It was split decisions.
But they look like bad calls in hindsight, don't they? Like, that's the reality. They do, don't they? Like, I mean, a lot of those names you've mentioned, you know, in the passage of time, the other players probably should have been in there. Is the reality
possibly the templates change massively now? A lot of them were playing in England at the time and playing not all of them. There was still a lot of good players in there, but there definitely could have been a few more months.
Who did you get in for?
David Corkery. He hurt his back, and we were in Connemara and a bit of a team building thing with Munster, and both Wally and myself had two kind of strains or injuries, calf, I think, and Wally had hamstring or something like that. We got a phone call, and we weren't competing or taking part in the activities, climbing trees and building all this stuff.
New Fandango team
yeah,
bonding.
Yeah, it was team bonding anyway, and we weren't involved. But when we got the phone call, the boys always said, we've suddenly, for fellas who weren't involved, we sprinted down the hill to get into our cars to get back to Dublin quickly. And the two of us were brought to Dublin. And we both were assessed because we had knocks, and it was deemed that I was the one that was going to play for Corks, and Wally had to go home the next day. But yeah, it was a short-lived World Cup. But it's amazing. It's 25 years.
Amazing. Brilliant stories. Can we spool back the clock? Our eagle-eyed colleague Owen Sheehan noticed yesterday that it was 25 years running since Munster beat Ireland in a World Cup warm-up game at Musgrave Park, I think it was. The context here, that the Ireland squad had been named for the upcoming Rugby World Cup, and it was very light on Munster players, and you had a point to prove. Game you remember?
Not till I got a text from Owen that we may talk about this in the show tomorrow. Sorry, by Colum. It was kind of the start of the, I suppose, professional journey for Munster, in the fact that there was a good crop of young players coming through with big ambition around the same age that have probably come through Munster schools, progressed through Irish under-21s, and we're now getting a crack at Munster at the big time. And it's only when you look at it now, kind of in terms of, you know, Peter Stringer, myself, Wally, Queenie, Axel, Galliv, Marcus, Frankie, John Hayes, that became the kind of the starting team or the replacements for Ireland going forward over a long period of time. We weren't obviously internationals when we played that game, but that was always the drive of that team. So, you know, it was it's staggering to think, obviously. I think Munster had 5 players going to that World Cup of 30, you know, which is
wild.
Yeah, but I suppose it just showed where Munster rugby was at that stage.
You weren't thinking like that, though. Warren Gatland was the head coach, and I was surprised to remind myself that Don Lennon was involved in the selection somewhere and how he almost allowed that to happen. But you weren't thinking like that at the time. You weren't thinking, well, this is where we're at. You were thinking, this is not right, and we need to show them.
It was kind of... 25 years later, you're always will think differently, but like your level of reasoning back then is completely different than it is nowadays. The match was pitched to us like it's an injustice that there's so little Munster guys going on this World Cup. So what are we going to show? And being from Munster, obviously, you're kind of like, okay, it's Ireland, but it's their away team. You know, they're coming into Cork, into Musgrave Park, and the atmosphere was unbelievable, I remember. And they were kind of going, well, they don't rate you, you know, these, your own don't rate you. There's nothing worse than your own not rating you. So we were fired up, obviously, and Ireland were obviously had a different plan. They had to peak a month later, but as we now know with hindsight, they didn't peak at all, and that World Cup was not a good event. So from, I suppose, a story point of view, it worked well. Well, the signs were evident early on that it wasn't going well. Munster would be able to beat Ireland, but it was, you know, it wasn't Ireland's test team, far from it. Mm-hmm. But it was explained to me that they were all, I was obviously invited to do a few of the training camps after that. So
okay.
Usually they take two or three out halves, you know, so it was Thompson, and Eric Elwood, and I think they only bring two old halves, and they brought an extra prop.
Yeah, Angus McKean, I think, was the fifth prop, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, even at a young age, when you're completely blind to your own situation, you kind of understand, well, there's David Humphreys and there's Eric Elwood. I mean, if you're picked ahead of one of those two to go to the World Cup, it's not right, obviously, because you've no experience in the bank, but you were kind of hoping that because of your game against Ireland, you can kind of go, well, I had a really good game there in front of 4,000 people, pick me. But you need a little bit more of performances in the bank to be able to get on the plane. But if there was a third choice out half and it wasn't you, then you'd be kind of like, oh, well, that's disappointing. But even going back then, it was perfectly well explained. But you can see with the Munster team, a lot of those guys have played at huge futures in the Irish jersey for the next 10, 15 years.
The Clough goes down with injury at some point before the game. He's not able to line out for Ireland, unfortunately, that evening. Mick Galway's he's emotional before the game, and you know it's I can you know, they've made a lot of obviously dramas about Munster games through the years. This one feels like it's got an awful lot of plot twists. What was it?
So what happened with the claw
got, I think he got a very bad injury.
What are you trying to suggest that he because of the occasion he feigned a calf muscle, is it?
I'm not saying anything, but he was fine, I think, at some point subsequently.
No.
What was it?
I was well able to do a lot of things, but I think my love for the man in that regard, I'm not too sure would he be have the cop on to it, kind of go, and I'm actually gonna, he wouldn't have been afraid of playing Munster in Musgrave, that's for sure.
Fair enough.
And I don't, yeah, maybe he wanted an evening off. I could give him that as well. There's probably a hot dog stand or beers going for free in Musgrave Park, so he might have had his eye on that. But in terms of kind of getting jumping ship, that would be the last, he'd be the last fella that would kind of not fancy a battle.
I read your quote here from Ronan Agar after the game. Elwood started for Ireland and I thought I outplayed him again.
Yeah, that's, I read that. It's cringe, you know.
Really?
Oh, well, imagine you pick up that copy blind. I played Elwood and I outplayed him again. This is a 20-year-old who's probably played him, I could imagine, maybe twice. The lack of humility in that statement is the first thing that strikes me. The second thing is always check with your ghostwriter when you're writing a book that you don't say those kind of things for young players coming through, because it's the immediate thought is just a lack of respect for Eric Elwood, you know? That's,
it's confidence though, Ronan. Well, you can look at it the other way.
It's for me, that's arrogant. That's poor language. That's not, there's a different way of saying that. I could have said there, for trying to say the same thing, you could say, I felt like I had a really good game. For me, you're rubbing your nose in something when you kind of go, I felt I outplayed Elwood. You don't need to make any reference to a person or your direct opponent, even though you don't ever play against the opposition out half, because it's more their back row would be kind of having a go at me and our back row would be trying to disrupt Eric Elwood. So, you know, it's, I saw that quote and it sent the, oof, it was like one of those moments, oh, stop, please.
But as a 20-year-old, listen, who wants to be, have a quote from when they were 20 stuck in front of their nose? I certainly wouldn't. But as a 20-year-old, there's a bit of cojones about it, I suppose. Isn't that the... Listen, I appreciate when you look back at it in hindsight, that's a totally reasonable point. But at the time, it's not really Elwood you're talking to either, isn't it? It's more like Warren Gatland. Listen, I'm here, buddy.
No, it's just... A 20-year-old, you don't have 5 years of good games behind you. You know what I mean? You're talking about Eric Elwood, who's been a brilliant 10 for Ireland at that stage. You should be probably, with hindsight, you'd wish if you'd used different language and all. You don't need to remind Gatland or the coach in the press by going. People have seen it. They've their takeaways from the game. The acts are always more powerful than the words, you know. Obviously, this is taken from an autobiography or something, but like it's just move on, please. Thought I outplayed him again. Yeah. You're 20 years of age, like, you know. You may have played him once before in your career.
You were 22. You were 22, by the way. Just.
Okay. Yeah, but it was probably
same point.
Still young. It didn't lead to any awkward conversations, presumably, with Eric Elwood, Ronan. Like, you don't go into camp and feel the need to apologise or anything.
Yeah,
like,
I'd say exactly. Like a lot of people, it isn't the people you play with read your book, you know, thankfully. Mm-hmm. So he's never read it, I hope.
Last word.
If he did, I'm sorry, Eric. I'll buy you a beer.
Last word on it. Brian O'Driscoll said that you were a good man for a shoulder pad back then.
Like an NFL player, I think was the exact phrase he said.
Yeah, there was some unbelievably good Under Armour wear. Yeah, I can remember there was a blue version, all right, that was particularly. There's some photos that have resurfaced from that time. They were obviously, I couldn't have been a perfect prototype in terms of design, being, I'd say, you know, probably 80 kgs. I mean, with 4 litres of water, 84 kgs when I had to weigh in the morning to pretend I had bulked up, you know. So, and then you add in the shoulder pads, and if it was a wet day, you might get to 86 kgs. So between drinking water and the amount of... usually, obviously, playing in Ireland, it was wet, and with the shoulder pads, you could get another maybe 2 kgs out of you. So you're weighing in at 86 kgs playing test rugby, when essentially you were probably at that stage in those photos, you'd be 80 kgs. Yeah. So, shoulder pads had a role for a few years.
It
was probably those years when you're finding yourselves, but. They didn't last, thankfully.
Yeah, Ronan O'Gara there, remembering the autumn of 1999 when Ireland and Munster faced off in preparation for that Rugby World Cup. Of course, Alan Quinlan was speaking just before him there, and Brian O'Driscoll was kicking us off in the first place. Brian was speaking on Wednesday Night Rugby this week with myself, and Quinny and O'Gara were speaking to Adrian and Shane on Off the Ball Breakfast. Off the Ball Breakfast is live every single weekday morning from 7:30, if you weren't already aware. And then we're live on the radio from 7:00 every weeknight and from 1:00 every weekend afternoon as well. So there's heaps and heaps and heaps of rugby content coming your way between now and the end of the season. Offtheball.com/join is where you want to go if you want to sign up. And I can promise you there'll be plenty more of that content as the season rages on. Thanks a million for listening. Chat to you next time.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster Rugby. Never stop competing.